This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.
I'm Steve Scherr. Today, Secretary of State John Kerry met with his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, and Ukrainian officials in Geneva to discuss the unrest in eastern Ukraine. European officials were there as well. After the meeting, both sides came out saying they've agreed on steps to de-escalate the crisis in Ukraine. The talks, though, are coming after a recent escalation in violence and unrest between pro-Russian militants and Ukrainian forces around eastern Ukraine. Now the world waits to see how the agreement will hold up. Here to fill us in on today's talks between the U.S. and Russia is Columbia University President Stefan Sestanovich. He's the author of a new book, Maximalist: America in the World from Truman to Obama, former ambassador to the former USSR during the Clinton administration. Professor Stanovich, thanks for joining us. You weren't ambassador to the former USSR. You would have been ambassador to Russia, I guess. Isn't that right?
I was in charge of policy toward the former Soviet Union.
Yeah, okay. That makes more sense. What came out of these talks today?
Well, there was an agreement calling for, a de-escalation, reduction of tensions, some interesting specifics, amnesty for people who've been occupying buildings. That's a lot of those pro-Russian protesters, and a national dialogue in Ukraine. It may turn out that this is just another meaningless diplomatic document. We don't know.
Well, even the fact that you're putting some hope on it is interesting to me. Why do you think that it isn't just another meaningless diplomatic document?
Well, the Russians have some interest at this point in seeing whether they can translate some of the advantages that they've gotten from the last few days of confrontations in eastern Ukraine and turning that into greater leverage that's accepted by the United States and Europe. Leverage to force changes in the Ukrainian constitution, maybe a kind of greater autonomy for some of those eastern provinces, possibly sparing them the need for a really messy invasion.
But what is the end game, do you think, for Vladimir Putin?
Well, we don't know that yet. That's one of the things about Putin is he doesn't tell you exactly what he's after. We don't know whether he wants to break Ukraine up or just dictate the rules for the Ukrainian political system such that he's able to dominate Ukraine. And obviously the difference between those two could be the difference between war and peace. If he really wants to break Ukraine up, he's going to have something like a new Cold War in his hands with the United States and Europe. Not exactly like the old Cold War, but it'll be a very, very deep estrangement. If he can find a way to more subtly, without an invasion, just rewrite the rules of Ukrainian politics, he may get most of what he really needs. So we don't know what he's after.
Rewriting those rules might include what people are calling a loose federation of the Ukraine?
Yeah, the Russians have talked about this term federalism for Ukraine. What they seem to mean is really a kind of decentralization of the political system so that the central government really wouldn't have very much power. We tend to think of our federal government as pretty strong. They have in mind something that would involve a really serious devolution of power so that those eastern provinces in Ukraine could really be more, in a way, integrated into Russia, maybe not formally.
Professor Stephen Sestanovich is Senior Fellow for Russia and Eurasian Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Of course, that could just be the middle of the game towards somehow, at some point, reincorporating all of Ukraine into a greater Russia. Do you think
Absolutely.
That's an interest?
Putin has kind of let loose a process that can be very unstable because there are a lot of people in Ukraine who have very different conceptions of what their cultural loyalties are, what their national loyalties are, their ability to get along with each other. You know, for the past 20 years, most of these conflicts have been kind of submerged in Ukrainian politics. But now they're back on the agenda, and there's a kind of anxiety in the across the country as to whether it can hold together.
The Russian economy's in trouble even before this began. Why is what are the systemic problems here, and what does the Ukraine situation do to their economy?
Well, the economy has slowed from a average of almost 7% in the past decade to just a little over 1% last year, and now some people are forecasting that it may go into recession. For Putin, those are some people say, reasons for him to kind of distract unhappy Russians with nationalist achievements. There's no doubt that some of the costs of absorbing Crimea, for example, the part of Ukraine they've already annexed, will be significant. They probably are not going to be the kinds of costs that will by themselves drag down the Russian economy, but they've been headed toward recession in any case, right up until before this crisis began.
And the Europeans, of course, want to have that gas flowing. What are their alternatives to kowtowing to Putin?
Well, they are, of course, very reluctant to have a breach with Russia because Russia's a big trading partner for them. They're not their only source of gas or anything, but, you know, for a lot of European countries, big European economies, they get maybe 30% of their gas from Russia. They have been looking at other kinds of sanctions that could convey the kind of disapproval that they feel toward what Russia has done in tearing apart a big neighbor. That can include financial sanctions. It can include personal visa bans, seizure of assets. So far, the Europeans have not really stepped up to do very much. But to be fair, we haven't really done very much. This has not been a case of really impressive U.S.-European coordination.
You know, Professor Sustanovich, listening to Putin's nationwide talk show that he had yesterday, and then listening also to reactions of some Russians around the country and in the Ukraine, I'll show my bias here. They seemed paranoid and out of touch with reality. Now, that's my bias, so how should I judge what they think and feel about what's going on?
You mean how Russians feel and how Putin feels?
Yeah.
I think paranoia is a term that a lot of people are applying to Putin. But, you know, there is a very strong sense among Russians that they have an opportunity now to bounce back from the decline in their power that they experienced in the 1990s in particular. And this is a chance to show other countries that they don't have to take it anymore. There's a, you know, often a kind of short-sightedness in that kind of nationalism. The question is for Putin, you know, will other countries accept this? Will there be will he be able to maintain an important position in the international order, or will other countries isolate Russia and penalize it? If that's the case, then his nationalism may backfire.
Just real quick, can you foresee Ukrainians picking up arms? Just yes or no, sort of?
Well, Ukrainians have been very, very badly organized in their attempts to deal with these uprisings that they had first in Kiev. There was a lot of brutality and killing that brought down the government. They've been very disorganized in dealing with these uprisings and protests in eastern Ukraine now. And the question is whether, if they use the same kind of force, they're going to have the same kind of response against them, an alienation on the part of eastern Ukrainians. That seems to be what Putin is after. He wants to get the Ukrainian government to discredit itself in the way that the previous government did.
Yeah. Professor Sustanovich, thanks a lot.
A pleasure.
Professor Stephen Sustanovich is author of Maximalist America in the World from Truman to Obama.